came from across North America. The Endless Talker, the Horror Host, the Canadian Web Slinger. They meet here in the basement of an abandoned comic book shop for one purpose and one purpose only. To drink from the water cooler of stories and talk about comic books. This is Tales from the Water Cooler.
So, welcome everybody to this week's Tales from the Water Cooler. Oh, that's right, he's gone. I forgot.
You mean Aaron? Aaron used to do that? I thought it was Gid.
With us this week we have...
Infinite Speech.
The Comic Book Clergyman.
And Decapitated Dan. What's going on, guys?
It's Mardi Gras!
It's the end of Mardi Gras.
It is. It is, actually. Yeah. I just came from a Mardi Gras party, which was awesome.
That's where you were just at?
I was. It was just there. Yeah.
And then you came and joined us?
No. Well, see, I mean, it's a church. So, you know, things start wrapping up around 8 o'clock. If you start at 6, things start wrapping up around 8. So,
that's funny that it starts wrapping up. That means they're putting their clothes back on again.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. Yeah, it's one of those kind of churches. Yeah. But no, we had oysters, we had jambalaya, we had etouffee, we had gumbo, we had alligator meatballs. It was awesome.
Next year we will record this episode live from Jeff's church.
That would be awesome.
it sounds like they've got a pretty good menu. I'm over here with crackers and drinks.
Yeah, we're missing out. I didn't even get any king cake today. What the hell?
I know. We had king cake. We had beer and wine. It was great.
Crazy. Yeah. So how was your week, Speech?
Unproductive. I didn't get anything done that I wanted. You know how, like, sometimes in your mind you got stuff like, I'm going to do this. Nothing got done, but I went to work. Yay, me.
Yeah.
But I didn't get any of my personal stuff done. I mean, I got to read a few books I need to catch up on. That's my thing. I'm so backed on comics and trades. It's just,
Welcome to the club. This is why we all need clones right here.
Yeah, this is why I actually think that Madrox's power is actually useful, other than that he's a waste of a character.
Oh, shut the...
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a Madrox fan on the show tonight.
Oh, yeah, there is.
That's true. I think he's a good character.
No, I think his power is good, but I don't think he's a great character. But then again, I haven't been reading X Factor for the past 5 years.
Oh, ouch.
Somebody's a little sensitive.
I'm sorry. All right,
so I got my funny story of the week for you guys.
Okay.
You're gonna like this. So last Friday, my favorite band In Flames came to Joliet, and people know me know that
they were on fire.
They were not on fire. Not on fire. And anyways, usually I gotta go up to Chicago, but this was seriously like 20 minutes away. They played this nice new small venue down the street, so we were like, hell yeah, we're definitely gonna go to this. So we're standing there basically in the pit, and all of a sudden this huge space just clears right in front of us. And we're just like, you know, thinking to ourselves, of course, while rocking out, that what the hell's going on? And you look at the floor and you're like, no, somebody wouldn't do that.
What?
either, and I'm dead serious, either somebody shit their pants. Or
they were that excited.
Or they threw up. And the best part is...
You know you can tell the difference between those two things, right?
You know, not when it's that dark in there, and I'm not talking like, you know, logs. I'm talking about...
Oh, diarrhea.
Funny business. So anyways, it's hilarious because it clears for about a song, and I'm dead serious. No one was going near this area, and then the next song starts, and the people moshing again. They start to go over into it, and they're falling.
Oh, no.
And they're... and you knew it wasn't just like someone spilt water or something because of the color that was on the ground. And they would go down and they'd push off with their hands and they'd go.
Oh. And then they would lick their fingers.
Like, Snickers really satisfies you. Like, that's not a Snickers, but I taste peanuts.
So that was the highlight of the week right there. That was good. That's, so I wanted to share that with you guys.
Thank you for that.
Hey, no problem. I know last time you were on the show, we traumatized you pretty good.
Oh, no. Well, that was not quite that story was not as traumatizing as that one. So, but still pretty gross.
So, all right. Well, we got some news to talk about, and it's kind of breaking news to both of you. And I don't even know if you guys know all the books that were canceled, but DC has canceled more titles, and they're adding on two more.
Yay!
Oh, no. This is a big surprise. Who would have thought that DC Comics would be canceling more of their titles?
They are so good.
Tell us more.
Oh my god! Actually, while looking over this one, I noticed that it didn't have all the titles that were canceled. So I'm gonna open the other article real quick.
Okay. Wait. Let's see. Can we just take a guess at?
Well, I don't know. Do you know what's been canceled or not?
I think I read it a while back, but I don't really know.
All right. Go ahead. Go. What name one that's been canceled?
I'm gonna say Grifter. Or has that already been canceled?
Yeah, that one's canned.
Oh, that was already canned. Okay, well that's my guess.
Okay, Sweet. You want to throw a guess in?
Fingers crossed. Big money. Superman.
No.
Crap.
No.
All right.
So what has been canceled is Fury of the Firestorm.
Oh no. Why would that book be canceled out of all of the rest?
The Savage Hawkman.
Yes.
Oh dear God.
Deathstroke.
Not Cantor's finest.
Deathstroke. Well, you can see the thread. You know why those two got canceled? Because Liefeld's not on the book anymore.
Team 7. Sword of Sorcery.
What is that?
That's why that book is getting canceled, because you don't know.
That was the Amethyst book that just started, just like Team 7. They both started at the same time.
Jeez.
And the Ravagers.
What is that?
You don't know what even I know what the Ravagers are. It's Fairchild and all of them. It spun out of that Teen Titans story, the crossover.
Okay.
That involved every teenage character, but, Static Shock. Who was a teenage character in the DC universe, but yet did not show up in this major crossover teenage event? Yes, a brother's a little sore about that.
Racist.
Carry on, Dan.
All right. Hey. The other three that weren't on that list are iVampire.
Oh,
Saucer.
I thought that one was doing well.
I don't know. Saucer.
I actually thought that was just a cruel joke because I thought that title was doing excellent.
Well, I don't know. Saucer Country, which I believe I thought was Vertigo.
Yeah.
Is Saucer Country the book about cats just drinking milk all day?
You would have to ask the sensation that one, because he was the only one I knew who read that.
Gotcha. Okay, so it might be a cats.
The last one is actually a kid's book, which was Superman Family Adventures.
That sucks. And I honestly mean that, because the younger reader books, those need to be kept.
Okay.
That's how you pull in new readers.
I want you two to brace yourselves, because out of all those titles that they canceled, we're adding two, okay?
Well, doesn't that screw up the whole 52 number?
Who cares at this point?
It was screwed up after the first eight titles got canceled.
Okay. All right.
The first one I'm going to tell you about is a title that DC originally had in the 70s by Joe Simon and Jerry Grinetti. It's called The Green Team.
What?
It's going to be co-written by Art Baltazar and Franco, with art by Ig Guara.
And who's in it? What is it?
Okay, now both of these books are based on money, from what I understand. And the only thing we have here is this little quote that says, "The real question is, can money buy anything in the DC universe? Would it make you powerful? Can it make you a hero? Can money make you super?"
Oh, God.
It's called The Green Team. Okay, now, I don't know. When I first saw the title, I was just thinking, another Green Lantern book? I mean, now that Frankenstein's a Green Lantern, I guess, you know, you...
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was... I didn't even know that. Sensation had to tell me that one.
Jeez.
Okay, book number two. Remember, these are both based on money. It's called The Movement.
Is that the Gail Simone book?
It is the Gail Simone book.
Ah, okay. So I am a tad bit in the know. Yeah. I did read about that, the 99% thing and all that. The one,
Green Team is the 1%. Meet the 1%. Yeah, meet the 99%. Green Team and the Movement. They were superpowered, disenfranchised. Now they're the voice of the people.
I have a new name for that.
All right.
The Bowel Movement.
That'll be a spinoff.
Yeah.
So, do either of those sound appealing to either of you?
No. A book about poor and disenfranchised people?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Gonna keep my politically charged comments to myself right now.
Who's drawing the bowel?
Who's drawing the movement?
Yeah, the bowel movement.
I think it said, I closed that window. I think it said Freddie Williams.
Okay. And, what were you going to say?
Gail is writing that one, right?
Correct.
I mean, I hope it does well, because I hate to see anybody out of a job in comics, you know, just, you know, and sometimes you can't judge an idea by the name of the title, but, DC, we've been canceling and relaunching.
Maybe that's what she gets for being a baby about being fired.
Oh, please, they screwed her, you know that.
And then she went back to the same title. That's just sad.
All right, well, we have a lot to cram in tonight on our special Valentine's Day episode, so how about
Mardi Gras episode.
Mardi Gras, Valentine's Day.
Show us your beads!
And then give you my
heart. Woo! No, yeah.
And then the Pope will retire, and everything will just go to hell.
So I'm up for candidacy.
Are you? Congratulations.
Yes. You can go on Facebook and vote for me.
Nice.
Just kidding, you can't.
Well,
that's how they're...
You say that?
That's how they're doing it. The Pope tweeted for the first time like a few weeks ago.
Right.
So, you know, now they decided that they're going to choose the next Pope just based on Facebook votes. So.
Maybe they should Pope Idol it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Have them come out, show us what they got in America and the rest of the world calling.
Show us their thurible swinging...
They don't need to be swinging anything.
All right, well, let's play some Valentine's Day Superhero Jeopardy.
Yeah, we're nobody's singing any songs.
Nobody's singing anymore?
Superhero Jeopardy, it's in your face. Start the game, Dan.
Start the game. All right, last winner was Dan, so we have to flip another coin. Do either of you have a coin?
I do now.
All right. Since you're flipping, Jeff's calling.
All right. Call it.
Dinosaur.
My dumb ass look, too.
Okay, do it again. Sorry.
Oh, man. Let me put this bottle down. All right. Let's go. Call it.
Tails.
Ah, I'm going to stop doing this. Because every time I do it, the other guy wins.
Now, hold on. Jeff, do you want to go first, or you defer?
Hell yeah, I want to go first.
All right. This week's topics are classic couples, have a heart with heart in quotation marks, meaning somehow heart is involved in everything, and if they mated, I'm going to mix two Marvel characters, and you're going to tell me what their child would be who is not a Marvel character.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that kind of hard?
I spend my lunch breaks very hard at work.
Like, give us a, can you, do you have like a practice one? Like, what do you mean?
Oh, for if they made it?
Yeah.
Man, I should have made a practice one.
Okay, we'll figure it out. Just go ahead. Right,
sorry, on. I don't know. Okay, so which category would you like?
I'll do classic couples.
Classic couples. All right. A family member persuaded him. Remember, it's the couple you're saying.
Okay.
Not just one. A family member persuaded him to meet the cute girl next door.
Who is Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson?
Correct. She was trained by the hand while he uses his hands to see what's around him.
That's lame. Who is Daredevil and Elektra?
That's correct.
That was such a stretch. That's good. I can tell you wrote that. That's good.
These two prove it is safe to cross swords when your love can move the earth itself.
What?
I emphasize the main words.
Cross swords when you can move the earth? Oh, jeez.
Second.
That beats me. I don't know. All
right, get...
Repeat that one again.
These two prove it is safe to cross swords when your love can move the earth itself.
Dan's the worst writer of these.
You should have made this the five question, but that's all right.
I pass.
All right, it is Richter and Shatterstar.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I was thinking Richter, but I was thinking, who is Richter with? But
now
okay.
You know it is the greatest.
And again, I don't read X Factor, so.
Yeah, okay, all right, back to Jeff.
Okay.
She first met him when her aunt was dating him.
She first met him when her aunt. Oh, my God, I suck at this.
Three. Two, one, give me an answer.
Who is Donald and Daisy Duck?
No. Good.
I'm passing.
Captain America and Sharon Carter. He originally dated her aunt.
Her aunt, yes, he did.
All right.
Danny, sorry, freaked out.
Last one, Jeff. They became a couple while she was attending college in California and pursuing an acting career.
God,
it's Jeopardy. We gotta make it tough.
Who is Dazzler and Longshot?
No,
I don't think Dazzler went to college, man.
I don't think so either.
All that dancing in the club—that's where she got her education, from the mean streets of the disco arena.
Is that your answer? What do you got, kid? What do you think?
They met while she was attending college.
And pursuing an acting career.
And pursuing an acting career.
In California.
Pardon me?
In California.
In California.
Three.
One. No, because he was an actor. Crap.
One. Shout it out. Quick, give me something.
Wonder Man and Tigra. Who are they?
No. Oh, it is Reed Richards and Sue Storm.
Really?
Yes.
Two boring-ass characters I tend not to want to think about.
All right. So many points were wasted in that category, but
yeah,
each you get to choose Have a Heart or If They Mated.
I get to choose?
Yeah, it's your turn.
I will choose Have a Heart.
All right. He is also known as Elias Wortham. Oh, my God. Remember, heart is involved in some way, shape, or form.
Elias Wortham?
Mm-hmm. Three, two, one, guess.
I pass.
Jeff.
Who is Jack of Hearts?
No, it is Cardiac. Cardiac.
Oh, I thought, like, heart had to be in the title. Okay.
It is, but see, he's Cardiac.
Okay. You just wanted Cardiac to be in there.
So did, yeah. But the honest answer behind that one is I figured it'd be the easiest one out of all these.
Wow.
Oh. All right. Back to Gid. Yeah. He is also known as Jonathan Hart.
Boy, this is so embarrassing.
This is such a rough version. No more Valentine's Day Jeopardy. Three, two, one. Give me an answer. Or don't. Jeff.
Who is Jack of Hearts?
That is correct. That
yes!
One. he knew he'd get one. That name was just going to keep going.
All right. Back to
the only Jonathan Hart I know is on that show, Heart to Heart.
Okay, well, this is a TV show, people. All right. He is a villain of Ghost Rider.
Oh, I know that one.
Do you? Do you know that one? Yeah. Maybe Speech knows that one. Three.
Blackheart.
Correct.
Nice.
All right. Heart.
I got 1 point.
You got 3 points.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Heart was an Image series written by this G4 TV star. Three, two, one. Answer.
Oh, my God. That's the martial arts comic, right? The fight. Ah, oh, crap.
Okay, I'm giving you 3 more seconds. Then I gotta.
Oh, just... come on!
Nope, he's fighting it. He's fighting it hard. 2, 1, say it, Jeff.
Who is Blair Butler?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I had the first name completely wrong.
Who is? I was gonna... Margaret Butler.
No, I was gonna say Kevin Butler. Okay. Yeah, like I said, first name all wrong. All
right, here's the last one, possibly the hardest.
God.
He debuted in Alpha Flight and is also known as Kyle Gibney.
You lost me at Alpha Flight.
Three, two, one. Jeff?
Who is Wild Heart, a.k.a. Wild Child?
That is correct.
I knew that one.
Show off.
All right, now we go back and forth on if they made it. Remember, I'm going to mix 2 Marvel characters, and
you will know
on Marvel character they would make if they got together some magical way. Okay, Jeff, you're first. Spider-Man and Cloak would make this Image character. Three, two,
Arachna Cape, man.
Okay, okay. Speech.
Who is Spawn?
Correct. Who is Spawn?
Oh. What?
Think about think about what they look like or
Okay.
So this one goes to Speech. Wolverine and Warpath would make this Image character. Three, two, one. Jeff.
Pass.
Who is Ripclaw?
Correct.
I got it now.
All right. To Jeff. Hulk and Fin Fang Foom would make this Image character. Three, two, one. Speech.
Oh, who's the Savage Dragon?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
See, this is the fun category. All right, this one goes to Speech. Hawkeye and Shatterstar would make this Image character.
Oh, my God. Who is, what is that corny-ass character's name in Youngblood?
Three, two, one. Say it.
Who's Shaft? Is his name is Shaft, right?
Yes, it is Shaft. I'm
yes, Shaft.
He's one bad mother. Shut your mouth.
All right, Jeff, last one. Ben Grimm and Rockslide would make this Image character.
Who is Bad Rock?
Correct. Nice. All right, going into Final Jeopardy, we have Jeff with 21 points, and we have Speech with 11 points. Jeff, how many would you like to wager?
What's the category? Do we know?
It is romance comics.
Oh, okay. I will wager 7.4.
Okay, let's try that.
Oh, yeah. My God.
wager.
Okay, 7. 7.
7, okay. And Speech, how many would you like to wager?
I will wager everything.
All right. The question tonight is... missing. Oh, there it is. Okay. DC Comics just put out a comic book called Young Romance, which was a Valentine's Day special. But in what year did this series actually start at DC? We're running out of time. So, Jeff, what's your answer?
I'm going to say 1957.
Okay. And speech?
I'm going to say 1967.
And I have to inform you that you are both incorrect. It is 1963. And Jeff wins 14. Oh.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Spend all that time making those questions, and you guys can't even get 10 of them right.
Yeah.
Those were good. Those were good questions. Very good.
They were good.
All right. With enough of that, let's dive into this week's picks.
Whee!
This week's picks are brought to us by our Kickstarter of the week, which is Night Stars, Staring at the World Through My Rear View. Three adolescents swept away on a flying saucer land 66 years in the past in Roswell, New Mexico. Will they change history, or will they become it? If you want to know more about that, you go to Kickstarter and you search Night Stars. So up first this week is my pick. And, well, one of my two picks. And I chose I Love Trouble, number 3. Life on Mars. Thomas, a blind telepath, recruits Felicia to work with him at the Mars Corporation. Mars is a huge global conglomerate with their dirty fingers in a lot of pies, most notably the emerging field of nation building. With her unique talent, able to get to anyone anywhere, Mars is looking to turn Felicia into an assassin, capable of paving the way for a new business opportunity. Written by Kel Simmons, art by Mark Robinson. Okay, we've covered issue number 1, and I remember when we covered it, we were like, oh, I hope they don't just turn her into some little Nightcrawler character. And I am so goddamn happy to say that no, they haven't done that. This book is so damn good. I find myself every time, like when I read number 2 and we talked about it in our backup picks, the fact that, you know, if you're not just like awestruck at the artwork in this book, then you're reading it and you're enjoying the living hell out of it, because it's fun. There's a great mystery that's you know, being built around this. Felicia's, you know, getting herself in this mess. But there's also a good mix of drama and humor to be had with this. But I really want to focus what I have to say on the artwork. And I'm going to throw this at the entire creative team, because I want to make sure throw some mention to Pat Brousseau for lettering this, because this is freaking amazing. All his little help me out.
No.
Onomatopoeia and sound effects that he's throwing in there. It is just fantastic. I love the panels. I love the breakups. I love how everything flows. I'll say that this issue was a little more rigid than the other ones have been, but the colors are stunning. Everything is so great about this. And then you have the jokes. And the greatest joke came when he's like, what do you think, we were going to put on costumes and stuff like that? And she's like, no. And then they do this fantastic scene of her going to the comic book store, seeing what people look like, thinking about what the costumes are. Oh my God, it was just hilarious. This book, to me, is just on the rise of getting better and better. And I'm loving second of it. I think this is a must read Image title, so I will give it to speech.
Pretty much, I'm going to start off with the artwork, because it is freaking fantastic. From the line work to the coloring, it is awesome. Though I will say is that when you're a telepath, is like the trade off is some other type of handicap, because like Professor X, he couldn't walk, and he lost his hair, and he lost his woman. This guy, you know, is a telepath. He's blind. But he's cool, though. You know, he's real. He's been around, and I actually want to know more about this guy's story now. He actually kind of stole the show. I kind of see what you mean by it being more rigid than the rest, but it had those funny moments where the jokes were kind of like thrown in to lighten the mood. But, you know, he's establishing what Mars wants and what they want to do. But it is one awesome book. It is continuing to be like one awesome title, though I will say that, I mean, it was kind of stupid, but I thought they were having the meeting inside of an aquarium in that one panel where you see the fish swimming. I'm like, oh, no, it's just a real big ass fancy office with a very large aquarium. That would have been cool, though. But I love the scene with her trying to fathom how the females run in those tight suits with the triple F bra size and no zippers, no buttons or anything. And that was just a great little tongue in cheek poking fun at the medium. But, you know, I want to know what else is going on, because, I mean, if there's a darker tone to the book anyway, and I like the fact that it hints at it, especially when she's flying back on the plane and she did a little bit of self mutilation. You know, it wasn't like in your face. It was just real, real subtle to where you see it in the panel and then we move on. So it's all yours, clergyman.
Well, I just really have to echo what you guys just said. I missed issue number two, and I mean that both in terms that I did not read it, but also I actually physically missed it. Like I want to go back and read it. Yeah, the art is phenomenal. It's for those of you who haven't seen this book, it's very cartoony. It's a really good cartooning style. It's a little over exaggerated, very fluid, and just looks incredible. Almost graffiti ish. And definitely the letters have a graffiti kind of look to them. But really, the other just plus on this is the story that they're really taking the kind of idea of you're bringing superheroes together. But they're doing it in a very kind of subversive way, and they're kind of poking fun at kind of the comic book version of that. But this is great, and the more that they develop her character, what's her name? I forgot what her name is.
Felicia.
Felicia, yes. The more I like her. She's becoming a more well-rounded character, and then we find out that she's actually schizophrenic. I didn't know that, or I didn't remember that if they had already revealed it. So we find out that, you know, not only does she have kind of a troubled past, she likes to steal art, but she's also schizophrenic. So here you have a superhero or, you know, a super powered individual who already has kind of a sketchy moral code anyway, being asked to be a part of this team of I guess, assassins. But she's also got a deeper problem in you know, with her mental health, and that's in the way that they showed that visually was really effective. So yeah, this book is great. I'm gonna go back. I gotta go back and pick up the second issue, and I'm on board for this one.
I think she's gonna take her boyfriend up into the sky and drop him.
Yeah,
I'm just throwing that out there. I think you were saying what you thought the art was like. I think, in my opinion, it's like, if I don't know if you guys have even read it, but Skydoll.
And yeah,
I think it kind of has that feel to it. So, all right, well, we got a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and rate this. And I'm going to give I Love Trouble number 3 a 9.
I will give it an 8.5.
I'll give it an 8.
All right, up next is Speech's first pick this week. What'd you pick?
Think Tank number 5.
Think Tank number 5. Genius slacker David Loren outsmarts the government, the military, and all of the brightest minds in science to escape the think tank he used to call his home and his job. But his tropical retreat is as oh my goodness. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's not as secluded as he would hope. Written by Matt Hawkins. Art by Razan Ekdal. That's all I got. I'm done.
That was very good.
It was horrible.
You.
That was horrible.
I applaud you. But you powered through it. You know, you powered through it. You're a good man, Dan.
I'm illiterate.
All right, then on to something a lot better than you, which is Think Tank number 5. I'm actually glad the series is back. This issue takes place several months after the fourth issue, because when we leave David and Mira, they have escaped. But then this one kind of fast forwards and lets you know that, well, we find out at the end of issue four that she was really working for the government all along. David finds out, but it's not after he's already like fallen in love, and they've done the do and spent some time together. So he is a really hurt scientist right now, but he is throwing himself into the work and making these applications. But the thing I love about this character is that he's got plans within plans within plans. And that's what Hawkins showed us through the first four issues about David. And like right now we see that he's being like, they're keeping even closer tabs on him than before. But I just love his little partner, you know, when he busts in the room with the Star Trek shirt on, you know, he wants to go and try to, you know, see if they can get things back to normal. But David is really into his work now, and I'm kind of nervous about what Hawkins has in store, because the first four issues just laid out some pretty serious stuff. And at the end of these issues, if you're not reading them, what he also does is explain how there are real world applications for a lot of what David is working on for the military, and a lot of it is being used to this day or being worked on, which is, it just adds another element to the entire story. And I'm just going to go ahead and rave about the artwork. I love black and white books that are done well and that can still carry and pull off all the drama and the action that the books can, that have a colorist to it, and the gray tones and everything is just fantastic here. So can't wait for issue five. And if you're not reading Think Tank, pick up Think Tank. Jeff, are you scared yet?
Why does Matt Hawkins want to terrify my soul? Because I read this, and then I didn't read all of the stuff in the back, because I was like, I can't read this. Like, because, you know, ignorance is bliss. But, I mean, the thing about this book is that what he does is he fictionalizes things that, you know, probably have some realm of truth to them in terms of what our government kind of does. And, you know, I'm not trying to make any political statements there, but and of course, you know, this is fiction, and it's, you know, science fiction in a lot of it. But I had not read this book before, and one of the things I really appreciated was a very good, thorough recap page. I felt like I knew everything that was going on and could jump. This is a great jump on point. I'd never read this before and felt very comfortable getting involved in it. Even though the plot and the text of the book is pretty heavy duty, like it's all scientific stuff and political stuff and, you know, all this stuff that's going on. But I found myself very engaged in it. I don't know how he does it in order to kind of make it accessible, but it really was for me at least. And so I really enjoyed it. The one thing that I loved was he has this, he's explaining this, this new thing that he's developed, David is, and he says, you know, for the idiots out there, I've put something in there so that people will understand it. And he put, it's basically this DNA strand, and how he's talking about how the DNA structure is kind of stupid. And, but so basically he throws Donkey Kong into it, and Donkey Kong goes and tears up the DNA strand. And I just thought that was a great little touch, for those of us who aren't scientists and were like, what the heck is he really talking about? It was just a good gag, but it was also, it helped express visually what he was talking about. So, so leading from there to the art, this guy is, it should be a rising star. I think this is phenomenal artwork. It really, really is. You know, it's very appealing. It's a very clean line, but with the gray tones and all going on in the book, it's just a really well put together book, both on the writing standpoint and from the artwork. It's just really good. So, you know, despite all the scary things that are involved in, you know, what's going on here, I may have to start picking this one up too, because it was good.
Okay, so quick recap. Story's good. Check. The art's fantastic. Check. Got nothing else to add. No, this like Jeff, I've never read this before. And if there's anything that's more accessible than this, just to pick up and read, and it says number 5 on it, then, you know, I'd love to see it. This was everything from the start to the finish, and I think that was what it was about. The recap covered a good amount of what had come before, but then I think they added and kind of reiterated everything as it went along. It was this is where we're at now. And, oh yeah, this is also where we were that we already mentioned, and it does a really good job. Hawkins' writing is fantastic. I mean, just the thought process to come up with this, it kind of lends itself to there was a book called Unthinkable, and even if you look at something like Nick Spencer's Bedlam, you know, using all these ideas and concepts of you know, just putting it out there, you know, if I'm thinking it, someone else might be thinking it and stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty creepy to even think about, like Jeff said. But I mean, pacing wise, you know, there's a lot of talking in this, but it's a lot of really good build and character build as it goes along. It really reminded me of art wise of Local. That's kind of the vibe I got from it. I think there's great tones throughout the whole thing. It's just a fantastic book. I don't know how much more you can really say. Easily worth picking up. And I don't think I'll go back and read the first 4. I don't think I need to, but I'm definitely going to try really hard from this point forward to stick with this book. So.
And Mira has a pretty nice ass.
That's because it was drawn by a man.
Well, that's true.
Well, Jeff, you want me to scare you a little bit more?
I don't know.
Is that all the facts in the back? Hawkins tries to, I think for the majority of them, there are links you can go to online.
Right.
And literature that you can look at to kind of back up a lot of the facts that he has here. But it's also shocked me how well and smart the book is written, but he doesn't have to dumb it down, but he writes it in a way that even a troglodyte would be able to read it. And yes, that's my big word of the day, folks, would be able to read this and still enjoy it. So, you know, that's just kudos to the team there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go ahead and rate this, but Jeff, I do want you to go and check out the link so you can be more afraid.
I don't want to be.
and in the know. But I'm going to go ahead and give Think Tank number 5 a 9.
I will give it a 7.5.
And I'm going to give it an 8.5. All right, moving on to Jeff's pick. What'd you pick?
All new X-Men number 7.
A big turd number 7. Mystique targets. I'm kidding. All new X-Men number 7.
There's a bias on there.
Mystique targets are young time travelers, starting with Cyclops. Written by Brian Michael Bendis. Art by David Marquez.
I will say that this week was a hat trick for Brian Michael Bendis for me. My top 3 comics of the week were all Bendis books. I'll just say that first of all, but this was head and shoulders above. I just am loving what he's doing here. Maybe I'm just a homer for Bendis. I mean, I just like the way he writes. It's comfortable for me. I feel like he gives enough gravitas to each of the characters. He explores them. He has their voices down correctly. In this issue, it focuses on the young Scott Summers, who is back, you know, who is in the present day from the past, and he goes to and finds a safety deposit box that he had back in the day and still has, which, you know, if you're going to be nitpicky, you're going to be like, okay, you know, of course he's going to have that. But he has all this stuff in it and finds actually the invitation to his wedding with Jean, which was pretty cool. And but the bulk of this issue is really him talking to Mystique. Mystique picks him up and they have a really interesting conversation. I like that there's a level there that Bendis is adding in that possibly not all of the original X-Men are necessarily going to stay with the X-Men as they are now in the present. You know, maybe she is seducing him to the dark side without him really even knowing it. So I like that idea. There's just some great stuff. I love the scene with Kitty taking young Bobby to school. Just the whole thing was that whole scene was phenomenal. And really what makes this book just amazing is the incredible art of David Marquez. He's just really doing a great job. He and Eminem are switching back and forth on this book, and I think that I would be happy with that forever if they just stuck with those two artists. But this is just continues to be great, and I'm really enjoying it. So, what do you think, Dan?
How'd you guys like the cameos in this book? The hidden cameos.
The hidden cameos.
Yeah, as soon as Deuce Klops Jr.
Yeah.
Goes to the bank. Monica Rambeau's in the background saying, "Ah, I gotta cash in my check for next wave. I guess it's over." And then at the end,
I didn't even notice her. Yeah.
At the end, Mystique turns into Freefall from Gen 13. Okay, no. All of that aside, I did like the artwork in this. I like Marquez's artwork. Except for the panel where Mystique is standing on the panels. That's the only thing, if I'm going to be nitpicky, that I didn't care for. You know, Deuce Klops is Deuce Klops, even if he's a junior Deuce Klops. And I don't care. I thought, yes, Bendis' writing in this is good. Great idea and great concept for Mystique to go after him and try to, you know, persuade him, like you said, to go the other way. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know how Mystique gets Wolverine's Avengers card. Can she shapeshift into objects like that? If you look at it from the aspect of what Jeff was looking at, yes, it's fun. But if I think that it's eventually going to come out that they're from a different universe. So maybe I miss. Are they from a different universe?
No, they're from the past of the 616.
Okay, so basically, Cyclops present knows exactly where young Cyclops is going to be at all times because he's
he hasn't lived this. He lived as it was.
No, if you change the timeline, he has lived it. You bring him to the present, he's still going to grow up to be that guy.
No. See, this is Back to the Future time travel. So basically, if you go back in the past, it basically creates another time. It basically creates a new timeline. Yes. So if they go back to their timeline, unless they get mind wiped by Professor X, it's going to create a new timeline because they're going to now have knowledge of the future that they didn't have before. So it would set up a second timeline.
All right. So anybody who believes what Jeff has to say, then there you go.
Yep.
I don't know. I didn't care for the ending of this. I didn't see that as like this big thing that even had to be brought up. I know it's going to like probably cause like a divide or something, but that puts it into Jean's head of, yeah, not going to marry this guy or something.
Did you read last issue?
No.
Okay. Well, that's partly why he did that is because Jean kind of has like, I need to walk away from this relationship because if this is the person that you're going to become, you know, I need to not talk to you right now. So he kind of – that's what sends him kind of off on this little side journey to, you know, is that he's pissed off at her because he doesn't understand why everybody's treating him differently. So what he does is he finds this invitation and he goes, well, see, we were actually married in this timeline. So, you know, so that's what that means.
All right. Well, I'm going to give it over to speech because I'm tired of talking about it. All
right. I will say that it is widely known that I am not a fan of Cyclops in any timeline. I mean, he's had his moments where he has shined, but I just really, for some reason, if there's a story that focuses on him, I kind of tune out. And that didn't happen until halfway in this issue, which isn't a shot to Bendis. It's just I really don't like Cyclops-centered stories. But the book was still written well, and I enjoyed the fact that Kitty pretty much asserted her dominance because these guys aren't used to training like that. They're not used to training basically the real world way without their powers. They're, you know, they're used to their little danger room scenarios. And I noticed one thing, and I'll point this out. When Kitty tosses Bobby, I noticed how Marquez drew that panel. And I pretty much, and I had to tweet him, because either when artists draw fight scenes, either they pay really close attention to martial arts movies or whatnot, or they've had some training. So Marquez kind of answered, well, he answered me back and said both. You know, he does pay attention, but he's had some training, because I always feel like if an artist has had some type of physical training, then they actually draw fight scenes a lot better and they know how they flow and move, which is why I love it when Marquez draws these really great action scenes. But, you know, the entire story is still a good one, and I actually do think that the ending had more of an impact. You know, he just slips it to her. The invitation was all made out, and she has that little tear, and it's like, oh, and he just walks away, which is kind of smooth. You just hand it, you let her tear up, and then you just walk off. You don't say anything. So, I mean, it's a decent issue. It wasn't like, you know, one of the standout all-new X-Men books. I still want to know what Mystique's card is. It seems like she just wants to keep the X-Men busy while they have a bigger play. So we'll see what happens. And it's kind of cool that Logan is giving young Scott a little bit of a chance.
All right. Well, so let's rate
I'll leave it at that.
I will give all-new X-Men number 7 an 8.
I will give it a 6.
I will give it a 7.5.
All right, moving on to my second pick this week is Dia de los Muertos, number 1. I'll make this quick because we're running out of time. In this issue, a mariachi falls in love with a woman who strongly resembles his lost love. A father is abused by a poltergeist, and a girl whose mother died when she was born visits the land of the dead in her dreams. Writers are Alex Link, Christopher Long, and Dirk Manning. Art by Riley Rossmo and John Paul Zucco. This is a very nice, I think, well thought out anthology. It is not, I will say this, I do not think that this is horror. I would say this actually is more of kind of a spiritual thinking behind most of these, behind two of these stories at least, of hope and, you know, what's out there. I think it actually plays on the idea of the day and not just like, oh, never coming back, you know, and they're gonna haunt everybody. Favorite story for me out of the bunch was the second story, which was by Christopher Long, which was the one where with the poltergeist and the fact that they were actually after the dad because he was hurting the children. I thought that was the best out of all of them, but I think that just plays to the kind of the horror aspect, where I have to say that I think that Dirk's story and Alex's story had like that really, they had that deep meaning to it. You know, the mariachi had lost somebody, and you don't know if what he saw and what he was doing was real or not, but it plays out, you know, like, it's the one day where he can have that. He can have what he lost. And the same with the opening story, where the girl basically dreams and she gets to go and, you know, experience, you know, being saved by her mother, who she thinks that possibly, you know, she killed when she was born. So I think that those two were more heartfelt than the middle one. But overall, it was a good anthology. So I will give it the speech.
I liked it, though the stories that stand out to me are the first one that stands out to me is the one about the father and the kids. And I love it when he wheels them in, says your ancestors has something to say, and he, you know, I'm severing my employment with you. That was really, really cool. It kind of gave me that not Twilight Zone, but what was that? The Dark Side. Tales from the Dark Side or something, you know, the little shorts and everything, kind of like that. And I like books like this, especially when you get the various artists and the various writers. Each one has a different feel and different vibe. Though the one about the girl when she would die on her birthday and her mom and everything, I wanted more with that one. I mean, I see how that one continued later on, but that one I wanted a whole lot more. So I want more of that one. Because I really do. Because, I mean, just the way it looked, the way it read, everything was just – that story had a really cool vibe to it. And the way it continued, I'm like, that's it? That's all we get? So, yeah, I'm anxious to see where that one goes. And if all the other ones are just done in a few short pages, as long as they still show this amount of strength and quality and short storytelling, I'm all for it. Because I honestly think it's harder to get your point across in just a couple pages and actually make it a complete filling story. So it's all yours, Jeff.
In all of the stories, I kind of expected something more to happen. Like, I really thought that the last story with the mariachi guy, I thought his wife was going to, like, eat his head off or something like that. I don't know. I was really expecting a little more of a horror twinge to this. And so, I like you, Dan, I liked the second story a little bit better because it was a little bit closer to kind of what I was expecting with these. The first story, I just didn't get. I don't know. There was something about it. I don't know. And those kind of stories that have to do with, like, spiritual journeys like that, I don't know. They don't draw me in because it seems very theoretical in art, and especially Riley's artwork, which I love. It's hard to tell that. It's kind of hard to tell that story. So I really preferred the last story of Riley's, or you know, the one that Dirk and Riley did. In terms of, you know, kind of showing the arc of this character in a very short way. So, artwork, you know, we've talked about Riley Rossmo a lot on this show, and he's just really talented, really, really talented. And that just comes across here. He consistently surprises me with, he has a certain look, but, he changes it depending on the story. And so if you like Riley Rossmo, but you know, don't expect Bedlam art or don't expect Green Wake art here. This is a very different look than I think the other books that he's worked on. So while it didn't really grab me, but the art was nice to look at.
Okay, so we'll rate it. I'm going to give the book, which title I'm not going to repeat again, 7.5.
I give it a 7.5 as well.
I'll give it a 6.
All right, last book of the week. Speech.
Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 20.
Ultimate Spider-Man versus Venom. Who is the new Venom? What is his terrible connection to Miles Morales' father? Written by Brian Michael Bendis. Art by Sarah Pacelli.
That's it?
That's it. Marvel keeps it short now.
I know, short and sweet. That intern is earning his burger a day payment. All right. First, I just want to say it's another Bendis book, and it's another well written and freaking awesomely drawn Bendis book. I mean, Bendis and Pacelli started off this series, and it was awesome, and it's still awesome at issue 20. I like the new Venom design. He looks more of a vicious monster now than he ever did, and I think that plays well and adds an element of danger because he looks a lot less like a guy in a really tight, oily suit. And just to, you know, rewind back, just the entire story, it's not a lot of high action, but it's a nice amount of action and drama because you've got Venom showing up to Miles' house, but he's, you know, calling out Miles' dad as the new Spider-Man, which I still don't see how he makes that connection. Like, I went back and read a few issues leading up to here, and I'm like, how does he make the connection between Miles' dad and Spider-Man? But the problem is that he's close. And then when Miles kind of, like, pops out in the suit and he realizes that he's wrong, he knows about the spider, he knows about, you know, Oscorp, and that's just real cool. But, like, one of my favorite scenes, even though it's got a lot of fighting action and some great commentary, is when he gets the web fluid mixed from, and I think the kid's name is Ganky, but you know, he makes the he copies Peter's formula and gives him the batch, and he squirts it, and it's just so disgusting. And they both kind of like just facepalm, and they just have this great reaction that Pacelli just makes even better. But you know, as a whole, the entire story just reads well, and I love the fight between Peter and Venom. It's disgusting. He's, you know, he's punching through him like all the way, ripping him to shreds, and he Venom blasts him, and the guy just oozes all around. And then Miles's dad gets really messed up, and you know, there you get back to the heart and the drama of it all, because if anything happens to this kid's dad, it's like, you know, he thinks he killed his uncle, and now his dad may die, and it's his fault. It's like Bendis has not let up on this kid. Like, Miles needs therapy right now if Bendis keeps writing it at the pace that he's going. But I mean, all in all, great book, and it looks fantastic. On to you, Jeff.
My favorite page is, and for the two reasons why this book is incredible. One, it's a double page spread, and it is, the first panel is Miles punching up on Venom's face, and it's like smack, but it's like punching Jello. I mean, there's just like, it's just like this splatter of Venom goo all over, and so Pacelli is just an amazing artist. I love the look of this Venom. Miles kind of smacks, and there's just all of these fight scenes where he's kind of punching, you know, this gooey kind of creature, and I just like the way that she visualized that. But on the same page, Miles jumps down and he goes to his dad and he says, sir, you must get up off this out of the street. And you can't tell because it's in text, but then in his thought bubble thing, it says, what voice am I doing? An English accent? Idiot. But I thought that was just great. Like, you know, here he has to disguise his voice to talk to his dad when he's in Spider-Man costume. But and that just plays to Bendis's strengths as a writer. He knows how to make comic books, and he knows how to make it so that make it funny, but also understandable in the mix of the story. So that one page kind of sums up the entirety of this book. Just the marriage between Bendis and Pacelli. They're coming together for this book is just continues to be enjoyable. So go for it, Dan.
Good issue. Enjoyed it. Great artwork. I'm done. Let's rate it.
I give it a 9.5.
I give it a 9.
I give it a 9 as well. All right. Backup picks. My backup picks this week are Crow Skinning the Wolves number 3. This mini was so goddamn good. I wasn't sure after number 2 if it could wrap it all up in one more, but it sure did. This was a perfect Crow family related story. My other backup pick is 68 Scars number 4. You just can't go wrong with zombies in Vietnam. And 68's awesome. So take that. That's it. That's what I got for backups.
All right. My backup picks is, well, the first one will be New Avengers number 3. Definitely reeled me in even further. I was liking the first two, but there was something missing, and Hickman just really pulls it off with this one. My other backup pick is Fairy Quest from Boom by, I think it's Jenkins and art by, well, it's Paul Jenkins and Ramos, Humberto Ramos. So awesome book, great little fairy tale stories here. Love the genre. I love what's going on in the title. Can't wait for the second issue. And those would be my two backup picks.
My backup pick is most definitely Daredevil End of Days number 5. Just the mystery that continues with it, with what happened to Daredevil, and the focus on Ben Urich. But this issue has the Punisher doing what the Punisher does best, which is not just killing people, but manipulating the system for his cause. It's great. I had a really funny little conversation with Bill Sienkiewicz via Twitter about the word Mapone, and you can go to my Twitter feed and read that. But anyway, it's just continuing to be a really, really great series. So that was my other backup was Fairy Quest number one. It's excellent.
I wanted to read that. I didn't get to it. I got to
get to it. You need to.
Stay away from this week. My stay away from is Vampirella Strikes number two. But, you know, I just have to throw this out there. If she's going to say that she's from Draculon, and now God wants her to fight evil, meaning there should be angels from all planets all over the place, I'm just saying, jump the ship. Just jump the ship now before you lose more of your money. That's all I got. That's my stay away from.
All right. I actually do not have a stay away from pick for this week because I bought all cool books that I like. I'd say, if anything, my in the gray pick would be Iron Man number six. I'm thinking I'm about to drop a series.
It's funny. Last week was horrible week. This week was fantastic week. There's really not much that I could say that I didn't really enjoy. I was like speech. I only picked up things that I really, really liked. So it was a good week.
All right. So as always, we thank everybody at TMV Cafe, Chicago Comic Vault, Underground Video Network, Drive Thru Comics, Comic Related
.com,
and Comic Tech
.net.
We remind everybody to go to Comic Tech.
See, that time I was waiting for you.
To check out the chirps, the reviews, the news, the manga, the movies, the articles, the podcasts. But there are no other podcasts right now.
Nope.
Just us.
That was fun. Yeah.
Good times.
And we ran long this week. We apologize for that, but we will be back next week.
We apologize for nothing!
So we'll be back next week to do it all over again.
The views and opinions of the comic book clergyman do not reflect
Tales from the Water Cooler, but they definitely reflect the COC.
That's true. So, I won't deny it.
Thanks everybody for listening. Have a good week and don't lose your heads.